Hello, hello, hello. My name is Jill Cody, and welcome to Be Bold America. Be Bold America is a live, bi-weekly talk show for those who are motivated to step out with the bold actions necessary to begin reuniting this country, save our democracy, who want to understand the challenges ahead, and learn what they can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to save our democracy. Our future depends on it. The program today is Power of Political Soundbites. In our overwhelming news culture, a short clip of speech that typifies a lengthier concept is employed by politicians to summarize their positions and or label opponents and ideas, whether they are true or not. In the past few years, this strategy has been increasingly exploited. For the current impeachment inquiry and the upcoming presidential election, the war of soundbites will become deafening. In the coming political uproar, the truth may not win out over the shortest and most clever soundbite. We have big things to do. On the phone with us today is Carl Peterson. Carl caught my eye when I read his article, Losing the Soundbite War, on Op-Ed News. Carl has been a political activist and has run for elected office. He's a father of five, with two on the autism spectrum, and is a special education advocate. He is an extensive writer whose articles have been published in Op-Ed News, K-12 News Network, and Medium. Welcome, Carl.
Hi. It's great to be with you.
Great to have you. And my in-studio guests and I are really looking forward to speaking with you today. And in the studio is Dr. Rick Nolthinius. Rick is the chair of the astronomy department of Cabrillo College. Rick received his PhD in astronomy and astrophysics, and his research ranges from black holes, chaos theory, dark matter, thermodynamics and stellar, aerospace, and human civilization systems, and lately, in climate science, where he intimately encounters the emotional aspects we're going to discuss tonight. Welcome, Rick.
Hi, Jill. Glad to be with you.
Well, it's very nice to have you in the studio again. And if I may, before I turn to Carl, I'd like to just set the stage a little bit about for our discussion on the power of political soundbites. I wanted to say that a soundbite, which is a form of jingoism, should not be confused with patriotism, especially soundbites that are destructive, disruptive, and repelling, such as name-calling, and the damage that that destructive and disruptive message does to the country in some manner. Yet we've been trained to respond to them that way, that we're a patriot if we chant, lock her up. And in my view, they are destructive to democracy when a soundbite is destructive in its message. And I find that Republicans are excellent at this jingoism because they understand that, as Professor George Lakoff says, all politics are moral, and morals are connected to emotions. With policy discussions that would include statistics and facts coming in second, think about the power of these sound bites and try to remember the emotional connection in the short narrative when I read you some of them. Here's some, for example. Fake news, deep state, sucker country, Benghazi, self-deportation, the swamp, trickle down, political correctness, welfare queen, family values, own the libs, lock her up, death panels, death tax, activist judges, job creators, perfect call, Pocahontas, invasion, collusion, delusion, build the wall. And what's interesting about build the wall is that really was supposed to be a mnemonic device. He was just told to think about that during the campaign so we would talk about immigration. It was never meant to be an actual project, but it became that when he said build the wall and the crowd went nuts. And last, which I think is really very strange, as Mitch McConnell is very proud of being the Grim Reaper, the personification of death. He calls himself the Grim Reaper, and he's going to kill any legislation that comes to the Senate. And I find that interesting because, you know, he's paid by taxpayer money and then is proud that he's not going to do his job. So I just wanted to do a little setup there. And so, Carl, you wrote an article for Op-Ed News that caught my eye, as I said. I know you renamed it for another publication, but in my view, I thought you were on the right onto something with the title Losing the Soundbite War. So what motivated you to write it, and what else did you want to say about that, too?
I spend too much time on Twitter dealing with Trump's supporters. And if you think about it, Twitter is the ultimate soundbite machine. You know, little bits of thought with, you know, out really getting into the specifics of anything. And, you know, Trump is a master of that. And I ended that piece by, you know, republishing a tweet that had been sent to me that, you know, basically ignoring reality. You know, it's these bits that they hear over and over again from Trump, and it just becomes reality to them. And we don't have that on our side.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I certainly know who Frank Luntz is. I know that he's their message person, does a lot of focus groups, and he's very visible in how he creates a concept behind, say, death panel. You know, the Affordable Care Act was then named Obamacare, and death panel would be Obama's killing you with the Affordable Care Act. It's just very clever how they connect these things. And as you did say at the end of your article, you know, virus only needs to take root in one host to start an epidemic. And there it goes from there. Rick?
Yeah, there's some great research that happened in the last, I'd say the last 10 years, on the Republican mind, the Republican brain, and the Democratic brain, and how contrasty they are, in that the Republican brain is has a larger amygdala, which is the part of the brain that processes fear. And of course, fear is a very short step away from hate. So whenever I hear the word hatred, I also look to find, okay, what is it they're afraid of? What is it they're terrified of? And of course, fear comes from the fact that you don't feel in control. And this is other research showing that on average, Republicans tend to be not so good at actually discriminating logic and working their way through things in a reasoning manner and actually come with real conclusions. They tend to react, they go to their emotion of fear quickly, whereas the Democratic mind, I find myself feeling a little weird. I'm not a Democrat. I never have been a Democrat, but yet this is what the research shows, that their amygdala is more normal, and what their brain shows is a larger amount of mass in the right. Why can't I remember the term? It's the part of the cortex that actually processes complexity, and especially error checking.
Hippocampus?
No, it's the ACC, the anterior cingulate cortex. That's it.
Oh my.
Unfortunately, I didn't put that into my notes, so I had to dig that out of my memory. that's the part of the brain that processes complexity and comes to conclusions based on taking all things into account and not just knee-jerk reacting from your emotions.
Carl?
Is that a thing, the way we're born, or does our brains grow like that?
So why are there differences? Our brains,
yeah.
Well, so neuroplasticity, which is a new area of brain research, has shown that our brains, you can't actually teach an old dog new tricks. And people are constantly growing new neuron connections, and your brains will change and will grow, and you can actually make new conclusions. You're not just fated to whatever it is you may have been like when you were young. So I would say it's more of a process and less it's something that you're born with. Not to say that there might not be some innate characteristics of your actual physical brain that might make you a little bit better at thinking, a little worse. But certainly if you're already not so good at thinking, there's going to be a tendency for you to not want to go to the thinking area because it's just going to make you feel bad about yourself.
Well, there's also a wonderful book that I picked up again and reread was Professor George Lakoff's book, The Little Blue Book. And George Lakoff is a cognitive linguist and a philosopher. And one thing that he does also talk about with the the Democrats or liberal side, and then the conservative, more right-leaning side, was talking about the two different kind of family types as well. I mean, there's the amygdala, and you're a scientist, and know how that affects somebody's future and their thinking. There's also, I guess that would be nature, and then there's nurture, which is the family side of it. So, you know, in a more of a Republican, conservative side, they are in a strict parent model where they're told what to do. Strict.
Well, I think that there's limits to that kind of
thinking. Oh, I'm sure there are, but there.
I know I grew up in a family where I wasn't encouraged to think at all, and I grew up with very Republican parents, and basically my entire family is very Republican except me. And so why am I different? I actually don't know. The only thing I can guess is that when I was young, somehow I ended up concluding that, you know, hey, you're on your own, kid. So, and I found I was, you know, decently good at being able to think. And from there, I felt a certain amount of reward in being independent and thinking clearly about things. And it's become very important to me. If you're not so good at it, probably you're not going to migrate towards it. Now, there may be family people who aren't in such supportive atmospheres, and they don't exert the effort of thinking because that is. So this is something I wanted to say, actually, about the whole soundbite-ification issue, and that is that there's this great YouTube video by Derek Muller, who's a great science communicator, and it's his rather entertaining way of talking about an issue that was first brought up by Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman, Nobel Prize in Economics. And he wrote this book, Thinking, Fast and Slow, and how there are really two ways in which we process information. One way takes a lot more effort, a lot more energy, and therefore biology, which wants to be parsimonious in using energy, tells us kind of not to go there unless we really have to, and that is to sit down and think. Okay, ponder. Don't jump to a conclusion. What we find is much easier is to just go with whatever it is we think we already know, or whatever it is that others have put into our brain, maybe through sound bites. And we end up just reacting emotionally and in a knee-jerk fashion, and then you get the sound bite people. So if they know they can trigger that, and they can especially trigger that among Republicans, they'll go for it. It's very effective. I mean, if that were my goal, is to manipulate people, and I were a Republican strategist, hey, you can't do any better than what they're doing. I mean, look at what they've achieved. They've done a great job at their mission. Of course, their mission is not such a great mission, according to you know, most of us who actually want a good future. But hey, they're succeeding.
Well, I do know that the work that George Lakoff was referring to has been studied and replicated about the environment that some people are raised in. Now, you're probably an exception. I may be an exception because, again, I didn't come from a nurturing family, and yet I'm a Democrat, and that's usually or progressive even. And they basically come from a nurturing family, that they've given more independence because they're nurturing. You think for yourself, you do what do you think kind of questions before you're told what to do, and given choices. And the Republican one, you know, is more, this is the law, this is the rules in the House. And I think that has been studied and well documented, but then again, I think there are exceptions to every rule, and I think both of us are that.
Yeah, I think it comes to some early moment when you decide, do I trust my ability to think or don't I? Mm. And if somehow, and again, I don't know how that started with me, because from my very earliest memories, I've always been this way. But if at some point you conclude that you can't trust your thinking, then you're not going to go there.
Now, Carl, I'm going to turn to you after the station identification. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org, and you may also email the station at info@ksqd.org. Please like us on Facebook. Today, my guests are Carl Peterson, political activist and blogger, and Dr. Rick Nolthenius, chair of the astronomy department at Cabrillo College. I'm your host, Jill Cody. Now, Carl, Rick and I've kind of just been bantering here. I'm going to turn it to you next.
Yeah,
Carl?
Yeah. So I guess in listening to the discussion you two are having, I wonder about issues where it kind of reverses. So I'm in the right in the education field usually, and about charterization and privatization, and you have a lot of people in that space. For example, the LA school board is currently seven Democrats, but when you're arguing charters, somebody who's completely progressive in other issues will start using these same types of arguments that we're talking about, sound bites, up to justify privatization. So how does that fall into what we're talking about?
I'm in favor of encouraging people and congratulating people for critical thinking, and I don't really care whether it comes from charter schools or public schools.
Wherever critical thinking comes from, what my purpose with this show is to at least raise awareness about how people are manipulated through their emotions, and if people get a grip on their emotions and can realize that they have them, this is how they feel, but then start taking a deeper look with their critical thinking. And can make a better decision.
Right. You need to recognize your emotions and then put them to one side. You don't repress them.
Don't repress them. Mm-hmm.
Don't bang yourself up over what you're feeling. But it's just one piece of information about what your values are. Take it as information. And then use your cortex and actually think it through and try and find, am I right here? Am I wrong? How does this support my values? How does this not support them? And don't be so quick to just knee-jerk.
Mm-hmm. Carl?
Well, I guess I'm more talking about the arguments that are used, in that they fall more closely to what we would usually consider Republican arguments. In schools are failing, unions are bad. These short arguments. Where they're appealing to emotion without going towards facts. And I'm just saying, if we're talking about different brains and the brain types that developed, how can somebody have that duality in that? In other issues, they are looking at the policy side and deep thinking, but in arguing this case, they're not going as deep.
So are you asking? I'm not sure what you're asking.
I'm just saying, we're talking about how different people approach politics, but this is a case where it's not as clear as that. You were talking in different parts of the brain are developed in different ways for a conservative versus a liberal.
Yeah, I'm
well, it seems that your phrase or your examples, like schools are bad and unions are bad, still approach that fear center. Oh, something's bad, I must be afraid. And so it's when you use that fear center, the amygdala, then a person is easier to manipulate. So the question people need to ask when they're hearing a soundbite like schools are bad, public schools are bad, is why would this person say that? What is the motivation behind public schools are bad? Why do they want to destroy the public school system? Is it for privatization? Is it for profit, which we know is a main goal of conservatism and libertarianism, is to privatize just about anything they can, and schools is one they've been attacking for a long time. So I think the critical thinking skill would be, when you hear those things, is if it's negative, as I opened with the show, if it's destructive, if it's a soundbite that's destructive or repelling, like schools are bad, then that's when your sixth sense should, you know, be turned on. Say, wait a minute, why is this? What's the motivation behind this? Rick?
Yeah, if part of the motivation is to defund public schools, I think that's a really bad thing. We can't have a democracy without an educated populace, and we can't have people with good lives unless they're educated. Now, are public schools incredibly great? No, I don't think they are. I teach at a public school, and I'll be the first to say there's tremendous flaws. But then the question is, what is it you really aspire to? What is it that you want for your child? If your goal is just to defund public schools and therefore the poorer half or the poorer 90% even of our children are not going to get an education at all, is that really going to make for a better society? I don't think you can make a case for that.
Well, and also, Carl, you said something in your article, Losing the Soundbite War, where you said, to put it bluntly, the Democrats suck at messaging. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, boy, and I wish I could remember the person who went more deeply into this, but he was basically, Democrats have to start putting their ideals into short phrases, not these, you know, they tend to be paragraphs and mantras. And I'm thinking of Elizabeth Warren, I guess, has the current reputation for that. You know, everything has a detailed plan. rather than on the opposite side, I think Bernie has become a master at getting them short and sweet. You know, the 1%, the Medicare for All is another great one. You know, where we have these quick phrases that trigger to emotion, but then also, unlike Republican stuff, have policy behind them. And so I think Bernie's the first one in a long time on the Democratic side who kind of gets that.
Do we really want to go there? Do we really want people reacting in a knee-jerk fashion? I'm not sure that we do. I grant you that it does take more effort to think about things. But if the goal is to try and convert, let's say, more Republicans to Democratic thinking, I just don't think that'll work. I don't think they're built that way.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Rick. I do think we're in a reality with Twitter and social media and short memory spans and television advertising that you've got to be concise and get your message across quickly. And then you expand on what that message is. I think one on the left that's been very useful or very powerful has been Moscow Mitch. We all know that he doesn't like it, but it tied him to him not passing legislation that would fund our voting machines to protect them from Russian interference again. So
that was very satisfying to hear.
So again, I think that we can do the same, and that for me was on the positive side, to protect our country. Unlike what Trump said about, you know, America being a sucker country, that again is a negative, destructive way. But when Moscow Mitch was meant to shame him into realizing he's in a key position to protect this country, and he's not. And so I think there's a way to be able to use what Carl is talking about on the Democratic side, or maybe with the positive message side, that brief soundbite that then relates to something larger. Carl, am I talking about what you were thinking?
Oh, definitely. The only thing I would add is I don't know that the argument always should be directed to the hardcore supporter of the other side. To me, I'm always arguing towards the people in the middle. You know, I think the diehard Trump supporter is a lost cause.
And yeah, I agree.
Is never going to come over. Mm-hmm. But it's that middle, you know, the people that if Hillary had been able to get, she would have gotten those, I think, what is it, 40,000 votes that in those
three states?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if she had gotten those, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now.
Well, you're referring to the group that's larger than the Republican Party and larger than the Democratic Party, and that's the non-voter party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones that are sitting on the sidelines. And we're at the point in our democracy, to say this democracy, nobody can sit on the sidelines anymore. So how do we bring them into becoming a citizen?
Well, I hope that the last election showed people that you can't trust the polls, and you can't just trust that you can hold your nose and vote for the lesser of two evils and then decide, I don't even think I want to get up out of my chair and go vote because, you know what, they're probably going to win anyway. And I think that was a big problem, was we turned off people who definitely didn't want Trump, but they also thought that there was no great need to go out and vote for Hillary. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that swung the election the wrong way.
Well, and they think...
I don't think that'll happen this time.
I hope you're right, because I know that there's... last time there was a lot of methods on how to steal the vote, too. One thing, the voter suppression and voter theft has been enormous, and that the Interstate Cross-Check Program had a big effect on those three states. And, you know, in Alabama, they require documentation from a DMV and then Department of Motor Vehicles, and then close all the Department of Motor Vehicle offices in the Black, Hispanic, and Democratic neighborhoods. So there's always something that's going to be happening, and it's hard to stay in front or ahead of these methods that seem to be designed to suppress the vote. And also that there's, you know, that apathy feeds into the rich, the oligarchs, the people that own the corporations, the people in power want you to think your vote doesn't count. Because why would they be suppressing nationally all the votes they can if they didn't think that your vote counted?
Well, I think they see that the Democrats who did not vote or the Democratic sympathizing voters who didn't come out last election are going to come out this time, no matter what the polls say, because they realize they can't trust the polls. So, on the other hand, the Trump people were fighting from where they thought was a minority, and so I think they did get a pretty high fraction of the people that wanted to vote for Trump to come out and do it. So in that sense, I think things are better. On the other hand, I can see from polls that if you're really a diehard Trump supporter, are you really going to feel comfortable supporting this, you know, incredible psychopath to a pollster?
So you're being reasonable again.
Yeah. Probably not. You're probably going to say, well, I haven't made up my mind. Yeah. Or maybe you'll say even that, I think I'll vote for the Democrat. Yeah. Whereas, you know, when you get in that voting booth, you're going to vote Trump again. So there's that aspect, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it goes further than that, because I was, when the Israeli election happened, they were saying the conservatives will purposely misstate who they voted to the pollsters, because they purposely want to change what people are thinking. And I would think a little bit of that is going on here, if not as organized.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it's calculating and deliberate that way, all the worse.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM, your ink spot on the dial. You may also visit KSQD's homepage and stream the station live to hear the show and other wonderful programs offered. Check KSQD's website for the program schedule or listen to past shows on our website's two-week archive section. And I want to take just a little moment here because to say hello to Coco. The reason I'm saying hello to Coco is I know she's listening in Pennsylvania. Last night I was preparing for this show and wanted to get my rundown out and work on my questions, and my computer wouldn't open anything. So I called AppleCare and got Coco, and 2 hours later... We've got the computer and my documents open, and she got to go to bed at midnight in Pennsylvania. So I wanted to say thank you, Coco. Also, a promo here. Tune in to KSQD Monday, this coming Monday evening at 6 o'clock for Climate One, produced by the Commonwealth Club. Climate One is a forum for candid discussion among climate scientists, policymakers, activists, and concerned citizens with a focus on energy, the economy, and the environment. Climate One airs Monday evening at 6 p.m. right after Talk of the Bay here on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org. So now back to our guests, Carl Peterson, political activist and blogger, and Dr. Rick Nolfenius, chair of the astronomy department at Cabrillo College. I'm your host, Jill Cody. And Carl, you were going to say something?
Yeah, so we all know build the wall and the whole list of Trump's thing. And I'm sitting here as we're talking, and I'm thinking, what slogan or similar thing did Clinton have? I can't think of one.
You mean a sound bite that he had?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
he or she.
He or she. He or she.
Yeah.
I'm talking about she.
She.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I can't think of one either.
See, that is the issue, is that you're right. The Democrats suck at messaging, and I think this is a real challenge for the progressive movement.
Yeah, the Democrats tend to be reactive and not proactive, and so they wait for something dumb to come out of the Republicans and then try and fight it with reason and logic, and yeah, that tends to take more brain cells, and a lot of people don't want to use those, and so I guess in a political vote sense, we've tended to come out on the short end.
And that's something else George Lakoff mentioned in this book, The Little Blue Book, as he talked about Democrats always responding and supporting the Republican meme, the Republican idea, and not coming up with our own, not showing the initiative. We have our policies, but if you realize that emotions come first and policies come second, then you need to have that soundbite that hooks the listener in that Twitter world or social media, and then talk about the policy behind it.
You know, it gets back to the first show that I did with you, Jill, and that was, why are we so angry? So, you know, and I tried to give reasonings as to what emotions mean and where they come from, and why anger, in fact, is a very valuable emotion.
I remember.
And unfortunately, Democrats have disowned it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a part of the Democratic psyche that I have real trouble with, and is maybe one of the bigger reasons why I don't, frankly, deeply identify as a Democrat. I'm an unregistered, what is it they call us? Certified non...
Declined estate?
No. What's it called? I originally registered as an independent, and then I realized, oh, that's actually a party.
That is a party. That's
so
right.
And so I said, no, I'm non-aligned. So I think it's non-aligned.
Whatever that phrase is. Carl?
Yeah, I'll make up my mind as I go. But the problem, I think, with the Democrats is that they have disowned their legitimate, healthy anger at what's going on. And they just let this happen. And there was this great quote from Michael Moore, who, of course, had this great movie, Fahrenheit 11-9. He also had another movie, Fahrenheit 9-11. That's totally different. Fahrenheit 11-9 was really about the Trump election and what it meant, and worried that we are going to go down the path just as the good Germans did in the 1930s, who elected Hitler. And we just don't have a comfort with fighting. And unfortunately, the Republicans, as shown by Steve Bannon in this great quote, he says, we go for the head wound. You Democrats, you just want to have pillow fights. Mm-hmm. We know we're at war. You guys, you're not at war. And he's right. Mm-hmm. Bannon is right.
Mm-hmm. Carl?
Well, I think as progressives, we naturally want to accept other people's views, or, you know, give them the room to have their views. And I think that puts us at a disadvantage going forward. You know, in that we don't want to fight almost.
Well, they can certainly have their views, and I support the right for everybody to screw up their own life as they see fit, but just not mine, too.
Well,
right.
Yeah. Go ahead, Carl.
No, I totally agree.
Well, I did, you know, think of some sound bites that I'd like to get out there. And one was predatory privatization. It actually is a title. I stole it from George Lakoff. Dr. Lakoff is one of his chapters in the book, because corporations govern your life for profit, he said. You know, governments govern for the citizens, and corporations govern for profit. So they want to privatize everything, privatize the schools, privatize prisons, privatize the roads, privatize your water, privatize the land, selling off a lot of our public land, or allowing the private companies to drill for oil and frack in our natural wonder parks, that sort of thing. So it's and they do prey on whatever they can to be able to make money. And I think what's happening at the border is an atrocity with families that were refugees coming because they would be killed in their own country, countries that this country destabilized, and then put into camps. And there's it costs $750 a day, which is the Ritz-Carlton level. So that's going into private prison pockets. And for what? You know, it's just so privatizing refugees was one of the most recent things. Rick, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, so this gets back to a meme that the Republicans and the Libertarians especially have been promulgating for decades. And that is the idea that laissez-faire capitalism is all about survival, and it's a meritocracy. It's a meritocracy, but it's not a meritocracy. It's survival of the most ruthless, not of the best. And it took me a little, when I was young, it took me a while to finally get my mind around that, because I was kind of a bit of an admirer of Ayn Rand in my early youth. Okay,
so you know I how it. I yep. feel about Ayn Rand.
Well, I know you. Well, I have a little more sympathy for at least that she was a strong woman at a time when that was absolutely not approved. But I'd like to think she's turning over in her grave, but I don't know whether she is or not. The idea is that this has been taken over by the libertarians as some sort of, we are providing the growth that the world needs, and what they're actually doing is they're raping and pillaging and stripping the earth, and anyone who can't fight back for all they're worth, and they're calling it a meritocracy, and it's not.
You see that in your climate work a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the fossil fuel industry.
Oh, the fossil fuel industry in the 1970s. Our own scientists were telling them that what we are doing will be catastrophic. And that's their word, the scientists of the fossil fuel industry. Catastrophic for the future.
But they went on.
And instead of saying, wow, this is bad, maybe we should change our business model. Maybe we should start developing solar and wind, and we'll still be an energy company, but we've got to do it the right way. No, what they did is they defunded their scientists, and they instead put that money into funding climate denial organizations.
And came up with a lot of product of doubt and sound bites, it's a hoax. You know, it's a hoax. That's a big one. Carl?
Or the attacks on socialism, while basically socializing the cost of all these energy programs.
Yeah, privatize the profit, socialize the expense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they want it both ways.
That's a very good point.
It's 6% of global income is fossil fuel subsidies, if you include the environmental costs. About half of it, though, is just plain old financial. I mean, that's a huge amount of money going into, and it's just because they bought all of the governments. Not
but
just the
Solyndra.
U.S., but Saudi Arabia.
Solyndra, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you touched on something, Carl. This is one of my sound bites, and I don't know if I have it quite yet, but this socialism versus democratic commons. In a democracy, we have a commons where we all come together. We are taxpayers so that we have a civil society, and when we flush the toilet, we don't have to worry about where everything goes. Or we open the faucet in our bathroom or our kitchen, and the water's clean. And we're finding now that's not happening in some cities in this country anymore. And democratic commons being the police department and the fire department. And But they call those socialism, and socialism really is when the state owns something. The state owns it, and the state is receiving the money for it. When it's a fire department or a police department, the city or municipality might run it, but it's run by taxpayer money. The money is held in trust at this in the city coffers to be able to pay for that service. And again, that's a little bit too complicated for the Twitterverse thinker, but yeah. I want to get out that there's a big difference between socialism and democratic commons, but there's a real reason to label democratic commons socialism so that it can be privatized instead, that's the only two options. It's either socialism or privatized. And when there's a third, and that's in a democracy, that there are some things we do in common for each other, because I can't have my own sewage treatment plant.
Yeah, exactly. The soundbite of socialism is meant to call up in you images of the old Soviet Empire with these giant concrete gray buildings and decay and depressed people and gray black and white photos, and you know, some of us who are old enough remember.
Yeah, those again,
days.
Another destructive and
right.
repelling idea.
So that you don't have to think about it; you just react.
So we need to come up with sound bites that are constructive and creative and compelling to be able to explain some of the things we want to do to build the country. It's very easy to destroy and tear down something, which is what's happening now. That's easy. You know, it takes a long time to set up that domino row, but it's quick to flick your finger and make the whole thing fall down, and that's what we're seeing today.
Yeah. I think in terms of an action or a policy and ask, what would actually make for the kind of society and the kind of people that I'd like to be with, rather than what's going to make me the most money or what's going to fit this political axe or not. I think in terms of what is a society that I want to live in. And then I find that, you know, I actually am willing to pay more taxes if it's actually going to making a society part of us as human beings, we love being around other people. Okay, we're not all iconoclasts, and we don't all want to live alone. We want to be with people that we admire and respect. And unfortunately, what we're seeing now from the Republicans is a desire to tear us apart.
Carl, we're blabbing here again, and I wanted to turn to you. Any thoughts?
Yeah, boy, there's a lot to decompress there. Yeah, I'm torn when it comes to the socialism argument, because on one hand I see where Bernie's coming from, and I kind of think of I got my activist starts during the abortion rights movement, and that worked alongside in Los Angeles at least with AIDS activists who took queer as an insult and said, I'm not going to accept it as an insult, I'm just going to own it. So I kind of like that fighting spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have half the Democratic Party who kind of works against that, because they're perfectly willing to demonize what we're talking about. So, further demonizing the word socialism, when we all know that Bernie's not talking about going back to Soviet Russia when he's, talking about his program.
And it is interesting about the word, because he's a democratic socialist, which is different than a socialist. And that's a little bit difficult for people to grab. It's easy to be labeled a socialist when that's not what he's talking about at all.
A climate scientist standpoint, climate is unlike any other problem that we've ever faced, and it absolutely requires strong government. And I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it requires more than a strong national government, and it requires a strong global government, because my CO2 becomes everybody's CO2 within a matter of weeks. And there's really no physics way around that, and the laws of physics are inviolate, and they won't be changed by anybody. We have to live with that. And I don't care whether that steps on your ideology or not, Republicans. We've got to live with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's also interesting is Republicans have spent four decades to drown government in a bathtub, and they're pretty close to doing that, having put the fox in charge of every hen house department, lobbyists ahead of every department so they can gut them from the inside out. And so they're very close to doing that. But then again, the question is, why do they want to do that? Well, government is about the only thing powerful enough, us together as government, to stand up to a corporation. So, you know, I as an individual can't stand up against Facebook or Google or, you know, these huge, huge corporations. Yeah. But government can. But also, if corporations really were a person, they'd be a psychopath. You know, corporations don't have empathy and compassion and humility. They're out for the profit and shareholder profit, and that's what they're designed to do. And government, we need to be strong enough to be able to keep them in check from taking over. And what's happened is government's been isn't strong right now. Corporations and the billionaires who own them are taking the government over. And I do see things as a three-legged stool. You know, there are corporations, and there's government, and then there are the nonprofits and NGOs, which is religion and all of our nonprofit charities and that sort of thing. And you take one of those away and you've got an imbalance. And I need to go to... You're listening to Be Bold America at KSQD 90.7 FM, many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. I'm your host, Jill Cody, and we're speaking with Carl Peterson, political activist and blogger, who wrote an op-ed article on losing the soundbite war, and Dr. Rick Nolthenius, chair of the astronomy department at Cabrillo College, who encounters soundbite thinking when talking to groups about the climate crisis.
Buddhism, Judaism, Baha'i, Islam, Christianity, Hinduism. Sound interesting? Faith Matters is a unique bi-monthly program that explores spirituality, life, and meaning with local religious leaders. We discuss areas of common ground and also identify distinct differences among diverse spiritual perspectives. Join us on the second and fourth Sunday evening of every month from 6 to 7 as we have thought-provoking conversations about Faith Matters on 90.7 KSQD.
And we're back with our guests, Carl Peterson and Dr. Rick Nolthenius. And in these last few minutes, I'd like to hear what your suggestions are for the listeners to keep doing, stop doing, and start doing. Carl, any thoughts of what listeners can keep doing?
Yeah, I think we can't afford to be silent anymore. We need. I know from a personal basis, I sometimes feel like I've just been screaming into this void, but every once in a while it kind of echoes back, and I find that my voice does have has had a difference or made a difference. Don't be discouraged. You know, these are discouraging times.
Rick? Yeah.
I wanted to say one thing before I get to my keep, stop, and start.
Okay.
And that is, as a scientist, there's an aspect of this that really bothers me, and that is that editors and publishers and magazine article writers also have a motivation, unfortunately, towards this soundbiteification to hook into your emotions immediately. So, for example, to take something from astronomy, there's huge damage that is done to the respect for science in our culture. Rather than saying a simple truth, you phrase a discovery in the following way. So suppose that scientists discover something new in how galaxies formed, okay? So something that I am familiar with. Scientists astounded by new discovery, overturning the paradigm of how galaxies form. When a more accurate description might be that scientists have advanced our knowledge in how galaxies form, but they don't think that'll sell. So instead, they have to turn it into we've overturned the entire paradigm. The problem with that is it portrays scientists now as just casting about. They don't know what they're doing, and whatever they say this year is probably going to be overturned next year anyway with the next soundbite that completely overturns the paradigm. And the respect for science, unfortunately, in my lifetime, has gone down and down and down, especially among Republicans. Mm-hmm. And I think this aspect of the so-called free press, the profit-oriented press, has a lot to do with it.
Well, and I also think the product of doubt, which was funded by fossil fuel industries, had a lot to do with
certainly.
Yes, had a lot to do with creating new messages around that. Carl, that was a very good point about keep doing. What do you have a stop doing?
I think, like I said before, when it comes to the diehard, Trump supporters. Stop banging your head against the wall and trying to convert them. They're either going to have to eventually wake up themselves, but there's no way you're going to get past the brainwashing.
So stop thinking that you're going to change their mind. Don't put your energy there.
Yeah, go for the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. The middle's where is that?
Go for the non-voter.
Yeah.
Rick?
Yeah, so under stop, I would say, here's a great one, and that is to repeal Citizens United. Citizens United has got nothing to do with citizens. It's Corporations United is what it really is. Mm-hmm. And I think all elections really need to be funded through the taxpayers. I think they all need to be funded by the government so that it is actually illegal to contribute to a campaign. I don't think that corporations or even perhaps individuals like the Koch brothers, very rich individuals, should be able to spin and to change our election process this way. I think it needs to be very rigid, very formalized, so that each candidate has a very equivalent amount of time and access to the voters with their message. And I'm sorry if that sounds like I'm infringing on freedom, but you know what? If you are aspiring to be the person who makes the laws that govern all of us, you don't have freedom, okay? So this is where freedom actually has its limits. You have ultimate freedom and personal freedom to do what you want with your life. But if you aspire to control my life, no, you don't have freedom.
Well, what Citizens United did, and back in 1976, Buckley versus Vallejo, and Ferguson versus the SEC, what they all did was, again, that was part of the corporate takeover of our government by creating the ability for corporations and the billionaires to donate as much money as they want, and PACs were formed. Mm-hmm. So they have more, whoever has the most money has the most free speech.
So we saw from looking at the work of Gillens and Page, this famous study, that the average citizen's influence on the laws that are enacted, the correlation is zero, whereas the correlation coefficient is almost perfect. It's 78% with what the economic elites want. So does that tell you about democracy?
Mm-hmm. And this is why so many people are outraged. But what I like to say with that is we want to have constructive outrage.
Right.
That's getting off the sidelines and doing something that's constructive and compelling and creative to build this country and to save our democracy.
Like Occupy D.C.
Occupy D.C., that's right. Carl, do you have a start doing for us?
I just want to piggyback onto what you just said. As a person who spent $4,000 on his last race against $700,000, I couldn't agree more.
Oh, it's, Carl, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
700 to 4. Those are tough odds.
Yeah.
Wow. See, that is my concern about, but it's something that we need to do to help the red states, because the Democrats in red states, because Citizens United would need 37 states to rectify an amendment or a vote for an amendment to the Constitution. And those states that are held by Republican state legislatures, they've benefited from it. So they're not going to be voting. So really, it's more we have to help the Democrats in the red states to start changing their legislatures so that they're inclined to vote for a...
Probably at the state level is better than trying to go too quick to a constitutional convention, because if you actually get a constitutional convention together in today's climate with the Republican Senate and with the executive where it is, And that could be a disaster.
Well, you're touching on a future show that I want to put together, which is there already is plans for a constitutional convention.
Well, let's not do it now.
But they already doing practice conventions, and it is the conservative right wing wanting to change the constitution that we have now, and they have 34 states already in their pockets, and it takes 37. So that's something that I was going to put together for, after the new year, that the talking about the constitutional convention that's already being planned and is very close. So that's another reason to get out and vote. And I was going to focus more next year on voting issues because it'll be the presidential year.
Shouldn't the Trump people see that Trump is not on their side?
I don't
understand how they can miss that at this point.
I don't either, but reasonable people, and that we go into that cult of personality. So in the last few minutes here, Carl, do you have any closing thoughts for us, or...
Yeah, to piggyback what there was just being discussed, an election, the most important part isn't picking the person who's going to be in office. To me, it's the dialogue that goes around that election process. And I think, when we bury elections in money and short sound bites, we kind of lose that. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's why we're in the position we are, and that nobody's really listening to anybody.
I think what we need is perhaps another branch, tiny branch of government, and that is the fact checkers. Okay, we need some independent fact checking that will swing into action immediately, so we don't have to wait and wait and wait to find out.
Wasn't that supposed to be the media?
Yeah, that was supposed to be the media, but of course they're corporations.
They're
now
owned by corporations.
And they've gone public, so that the only way they make profits is they need a continual increase in profits. That means cutting their expenses, so we're going to cut the journalists. We're going to add to more ad space, and it all goes in the wrong direction.
That was another one of my sound bites that I came up with that I wish got out there, which was they are talking about the liberal media, and I want to talk about the billionaire media, because that's who is in control. At this moment, I am very, very worried about the state of our democracy. I think the short narrative this week, weekend, that Trump said that Democrats are trying to destroy democracy. And on Fox News, DeGeneva, who went to Ukraine for Giuliani, said impeachment is regicide. Now, regicide means the murder of a king. Now, is the antithesis of what a democracy is. We were formed by a constitution with impeachment, so we didn't murder kings, and we have a president, and didn't call him a king because we have a president, and yet talking about impeachment to Trump, it was regicide.
This is straight out of 1984.
Isn't it, though? The soundbite there.
And eternal wars to guarantee that we're distracted.
Yeah. Well, we are now in a constitutional crisis. It's not me saying this. The conservative lawyer and Harvard professor Charles Fried stated this. As the Washington Post wrote last Thursday, Donald Trump has adopted the stance that he has the absolute right to rig the next presidential election on his behalf, that this is what he feels, and that this is how democracies die. Is Erdogan in Turkey. We've been talking about Turkey a lot. He was elected, like Hitler. They're elected, and then they take power after that.
There was a poll a few years ago asking what would happen.
Yeah.
What would happen if in the next 5 years? And they said, if Trump is taken out, there'll be a civil war.
Yes.
Now, of course, Trump has repeated that.
Yes.
I'm not sure that he's wrong.
Yeah. Well, let's hope not. We're not advocating any violence on this show.
No.
I want to thank Emily Dunham, Be Bold America's program engineer. And another big thank you to today's terrific guests, Carl Peterson and Rick Nolthenius. Thank you, Carl. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jill.
And thank you. Thank you for joining us, and please tune in next time to a replay of Shift Happens and America's Uprising. We'll be talking with Steve Behrman, who performs enlightened comedy as his alter ego, Swami Biyanananda, and who is also an author and political and cultural commentator. Joining him in the fun and cultural discussion will be local comedian Richard Stockton of Planet Cruise Comedy, and who is, intriguingly, a direct descendant of one of our country's founders who signed the Declaration of Independence. You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM Santa Cruz. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Faith Matters with Seth Shapiro. My name is Jill Cody. Keep, stop, start.